Hi.
Hello. We have the Everett basement. We want to know what he does down there. I need some information. What is all that stuff? That is quite the storage of something.
Think, what do they call it? The super locker? I don't know.
It's a bunker.
It's
It's pretty
chock
fun.
full. It's, yeah.
I think they'll survive longer than all of us during a nuclear attack, huh? You got to
Yeah,
set up.
That's
we're all
exactly.
coming over.
We're all going to Everett and Catherine's. Yeah, when we have a nuclear attack, they are going to take care of us.
All right. Have we all returned?
So would it be best for Nathan to give an overview of this project, or?
First, I think that we could formally just introduce it. This is something that your committee's been working on, and it's so exciting, but this would be the first real public announcement. So whoever would like to, lead off, give an overview, I'm excited to hear.
Well, I'd first like to thank Brian Brown for hanging in there for the last hour and a half, or like, so thank you, Brian. And I'll lead off. I'm delighted. I've known Brian Brown for a very long time, and it's just been really delightful reconnecting with Brian and having this opportunity to talk with him as the representative of the investors at Village at the Harbor. So, Brian, I don't know if you want to turn your, I know you had your camera on a while ago, but anyway, it'd be great to see your lovely face. And are you still there, Brian? There you are.
I'm here.
Hi.
Okay. I keep
Congratulations.
my mouth shut.
And Evan Peroles, who is, Evan, are you the still acting administrator? Your license is on the wall, but your physical presence is not on the wall. No, in a building.
That is correct.
Okay,
I'm still
so
actively involved, and my license is still on the building.
yes. So Evan Peroles and Brian Brown of Village at the Harbor, and thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for this opportunity, which I am very excited about. And Mr. Butler, you do such a brilliant job of explaining things more succinctly than I, who's very wordy. You want to take it away?
You know, almost no one calls me succinct, so I'll put that in my journal tonight.
Okay.
Sure, yeah, I'm happy to lead this off. So we've talked about this a couple of times in the last two different board meetings. We've sort of talked about this to some degree or another. We've been grappling with, how to deal with the long-term care crisis in our community, and it's one that is an issue across the county, across the state, across the country. Many closures, and everyone is trying to grapple with how to handle that. I know the state, they launched the new payroll tax benefit, which will fund up to $37,000 of long-term care services. We all know that's a drop in the bucket, but it does signify that people are aware there's a problem and people are trying to come up with solutions. In our community, the long-term care center, the skilled nursing facility, Life Care Centers of America closed in 2017. It was a pretty abrupt closure at the end of that year. They're required to give 60 days notice, which is literally all they did, 60 days. They were apparently operating at about $1 million deficit. I believe they had a 76 beds. I may be off by two, but it's right around there. But they were only half full, and they were really struggling. Most of their patients were Medicaid patients. The closure of that facility left one facility, and not a SNF, not a skilled nursing facility, but it is an assisted living facility, and that is the Village at the Harbor, which was built, I believe, in 2008, and which we're very lucky to have on the island. The hospital district participated in a task force, the long-term care task force. I don't remember the technical name of it. They were even less succinct than I am. It's like a paragraph long, the name of it. But I usually refer to it as the long-term care task force. That long-term care task force was made up of professionals from around the community to try to address the way and ways in which to close that gap left behind by the closure of Life Care Centers of America and Friday Harbor. They made a series of recommendations that ranged from like a home care option to facility, like a greenhouse model. They basically, what they recommended was a set of options intended to, yes, provide a facility option, but the system that has every intention of keeping people from needing that option and providing aging in place. That led into a feasibility study and survey, which was done, I believe, in 2019. And resulted in two HRSA grants, one of which is a planning grant for $100,000 for 1 year and started this last fall. So it's getting close to over, although there's likely to be a no-cost extension on that because they haven't used all the money. And then a care coordination grant for 3 years for $300,000 per year. It was a pretty significant grant. These were made to us as well as three partners: the Association of Washington Public Hospital Districts, Peace Health, and the Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation, a 501c3 in our community. This, it's become apparent, though, that there are many challenges with this approach, and the grants aren't likely on their own to get us where we need to be. The planning grant has arrived at an interlocal agreement that they hope to have all the hospital districts and the county sign, which primarily would be to advocate together for issues of countywide importance. And there's quite a bit of value in that. And people have pretty much agreed that it's unlikely to actually operate services on any significant scale. They are hoping to go out for a planning development grant in 2023, that would go for 3 years. The planning grant process is not done, but it's also clear that each island is going to need to provide certain components of care on its own. But it's not hugely practical to provide those services on a countywide basis, particularly not using the framework of a hospital district, which has delineated boundaries. We're obligated to use our tax money for residents of our district, and same goes for them. They're also in pretty significant different financial situations. Their levy rates are at 65 cents or thereabouts, but if they lifted to the maximum, Orcas could raise $250,000 a year, Lopez something like $90,000 a year, whereas our hospital district can raise up to $1.8 million. So that's really due in large part to our partnership with Peace Health, which operates a clinic on our behalf and does so quite ably, but at a significantly lower cost. We have an entire hospital with our 33 cent levy, and we subsidize them. and it's got an ED, it's got a clinic, it has a cancer care center, and that's that result of that amazing private-public partnership. And the fact that they will raise all that private money for building, and it's just an amazing accomplishment. It is also partly a function of greater population density. We just have more people, and to some extent, certain costs are going to be the same whether you're small or big. Like if you're build the same thing at EMS, if you're going to cover a shift schedule 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you need at least four medics, right? That's the same whether you have 800 people or 15,000 people. At some extent, at some point, you're going to need more people. But like basically, there's a baseline cost that doesn't vary depending on your size. Bit of a diversion. The bottom line is we're in different places from them. And so we've had to kind of consider, how do we find a way to move forward. Not in contradiction to the grants, not in disagreement per se. How do we start solving this problem for our community? And it might even potentially be additive and helpful to other communities in trying to solve this problem. But as we consider how to solve this problem, you know, we were faced with a pretty significant challenge, which is LifeCare closed in 2017 and it's 2021. I mean, that was, you know, four years ago. It was quite a while. And we were also faced with a pretty brutal deadline, which is August 3rd is the deadline for ballot measures this year. And so we had to kind of decide, are we going to wait an entire another year, or are we going to try to, you know, to solve it now, start working on it now? The other problem we faced was, even if we start working on the problem now, even if we start trying to invest in things, you know, trying to build a system from ground up would be quite expensive. And there is an existing facility here, the Village of the Harbor, which would make a lot of sense to partner with. We also don't want to risk undermining the Village at the Harbor. I mean, what if we were to build, you know, something separately and then ultimately undermine them and then they end up closing, right? I mean, it's important to really consider your context and whether you're really going to play a productive role or not. What we're proposing, myself, Commissioner Lachine Seitz and Commissioner Lehman, what we're proposing really is that we acquire the Village at the Harbor, that we use that as a launching point to be able to expand services within our district. They cannot afford to add Medicaid beds. They say they take a significant loss per Medicaid patient. Using taxpayer money, we can support that expansion to almost immediately open up availability for Medicaid beds. And then to, you know, in the next few years, build additional capacity. This also helps us avoid the need to essentially go out and get a new license and hire a new administrator. We were just talking about Evan and his license hung up on the wall. You know, these are not inconsequential or small things. We also know that if you start from scratch, Medicaid will make you wait for 3 years. So there's lots of good reasons to kind of be, well, you know, how do we make a partnership like that work? So that's the first part of this plan that we're proposing, is really that we acquire the Village of the Harbor, that we almost immediately open up some beds to Medicaid patients, and that we expand that service. We also get some economies of scale. You know, we can use shared kitchen, shared recreation space. We can do those sorts of things. We would also be in a position to potentially reduce staff turnover, which has been a challenge. The Village of the Harbor can't really afford to pay people particularly well. The average person making $17 an hour, no one gets benefits, not even the leadership. It's very hard to get a workforce that stays on that basis. You know, you train people and then they go. And I think, you know, there's the practical side of this, but there's also a human side of this, which is there are many patients with memory deficits at the Village. And they're not well served by high turnover. You know, they get used to people and they like seeing familiar faces. So there's that, but there's also sort of the need to make sure that, you know, we're not constantly paying to train people, that we're keeping and promoting staff and maintaining a stable workforce. That's been an ongoing challenge for the Village. There's no secret about that. You go down, look at a bulletin board, four openings. You know, they've had a hard time, and they openly say that. It's just hard. They can't afford to pay more than they are.
And they are not the only ones. Like, that's a crisis across the healthcare field, that healthcare workers are dropping out at facilities in particular, and that's across our state and probably across the United States, I'm sure. So that's a huge problem to solve.
It really is. And, you know, when you can go make $35 an hour and take care of one patient, you know, it's hard to want to stay. But we can offer benefits and we can pay people a little bit better. We can pay people a little more competitively. We're not going to be paying people $35 an hour, but we can do better than we are. I think, you know, it's important, though, to realize.
I think.
Go ahead. Am I being too
long? Sorry, I just wanted to drive home how important it is. We found that during COVID, I think I just heard the statistic very recently that I want to say at least 1.5 million healthcare workers across the country do not have healthcare insurance. They have no medical insurance, and they often have no paid time off if they're no sick leave.
Yeah.
And no vacation time. And I've seen this. I've worked 20 plus years in long-term care, and it's been a problem forever. And the fact that we as a community can support this facility by having it community owned, not for profit, and pay staff more money and have them have healthcare insurance. This is going to be phenomenal. And it's, you know, it's like, what can we do? We can start right here. We can do this very thing and get those Medicaid beds going. I just am delighted we can do this and have something that's non-profit. Not that, let me point out, it's not been a profit-making facility. And I would say that the investors who invested in this invested in the community and have not taken any money out of this building since its inception. So, and they're not making any money on the sale of this. I want to drive that home to the public too. So this is, you know, extraordinary on their behalf and that they've been committed to this community and to the aging population to provide this service with no benefit to them financially. So, okay. Continue, Mr. Butler. Thank you.
We're excited about this project. We really are. So that's the first part of this, really, is the Village of the Harbor. But I think, you know, for the public, they're not likely to, on its own, be, you know, sufficiently interested on that basis, right? But the fact that we're planning to not only acquire it, but expand it to take care of Medicaid patients, that's a big change for our community. There's currently really no option for those people in the county. And it's hard even on the mainland. Like, it is hard to get this kind of care.
Yeah.
To some extent,
very difficult. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting. I'm so sorry, Nathan. But I want to drive home for everyone who doesn't know this, that Medicaid beds are at a premium. Gail knows this firsthand in her work. It is very, very difficult to find a Medicaid bed on the mainland. Sometimes you got to go way up to Bellingham, go down by Everett, and they're not often available. And it's very challenging. So for us to be able to do this within our own community is an enormous benefit, because there aren't a whole lot of us, maybe even at this table, who have the money to pay for private private pay in a facility to the end of our lives. Most of us spend down our money and end up on Medicaid. 70% of the people at the convalescent center were on Medicaid. 70%. So, our bank accounts get drained with this kind of care. And so, thank you. Sorry, Nathan.
So, thanks, Commissioner Lehman. So that's kind of the first part of this, really, is, you know, acquiring the Village of the Harbor and expanding Medicaid bed access, and then also making sure that we can maintain a stable workforce through wages and benefits that are a little more competitive. But it's not really enough on its own. There's a reason why Life Care Centers of America closed. There's a reason why those really large facilities are struggling. And one of the things we've really got to do is manage scale and scope. We've got, to the extent possible, we want people to age in place. We don't want them to have to be in a facility. That's consistent with what people themselves want, but it's also what's best for the system. So as part of this, we would also be investing in a home care component, which this is sort of related to the care coordination grant. You know, the care coordination grant has funding from the federal government, but on its own, you know, once that funding is gone, it's not really sustainable. there just really aren't reimbursement rates for it. I believe the reimbursement rate is around $90. So even before you account for billing fees and stuff, you've got to do 500 of those in a year, you know, to pay someone, just even one person. It's just not really realistic on its own. Like, you're going to need an entity that can both afford to maintain this program and see value in it. And a lot of different organizations would, right? I mean, EMS, we have community paramedicine, which is intended to reduce call volume, because that way we don't have to hire as many staff, we don't have to have as many volunteers, and we don't have to buy as many ambulances. We, you know, it's worth it to us, even though on its own, it's a loss. It would be worth it to, you know, a hospital that's dealing with, you know, high volume. You know, you're trying to reduce overall volumes, even though it costs money, it would be worth it for us. And going this direction, it'd be worth it to us because we can reduce enrollments in our facility. And when people leave, they could potentially leave sooner. You can give them follow-up. And even if they're leaving when they would have normally left, you can follow up with them to make sure they're okay. And that can reduce people coming back in. So this component of it, this care, we're calling it care coordination to promote aging in place. It's not strictly just connecting people to services. There is a service component that is comparable to like a mobile integrated health or a community paramedicine program. Taken together, we're trying to address workforce limitations. We're trying to address limitations and how much facility space we can really handle. We're trying to encourage aging in place. We're trying to hit all of these different marks. There is a much smaller component of this plan, which also involves, you know, like $50,000 or so to support LGBTQ and reproductive health. Would be a very small component of this, but it's consistent with the board's desire to try to help the underserved and people that don't have other resources. And that's all really, you know, what we think we can do with just public money. We can go out and we can lid lift, and that lid lift can support a bond to acquire the business and to expand the business. It's within our capacity to lid lift from what we're at right now, around 33 cents to about 70 cents, which would be about $180 increase on a $500,000 property. We can do that just with public money. However, we also know that there is significant private money interested in solving this problem. Our community, our county is one of the oldest in the state. And people realize this is a problem. So there is significant private funding available to help. If we are able to secure private funding to pay for part or all of the acquisition or the expansion, then we have what we call stretch goals, which would be like a phase three stretch goal. If we're able to secure sufficient funding from the private sector, in addition to our public funding, we believe we could potentially provide adult daycare or memory care facilities or memory care activity support. We might also be able to provide, you know, particularly, you know, with the EMS building, we could potentially do some temporary housing or something along the lines of what Peace Health does. I think that taken together, this plan is intended to be able to have enough to go on, to go to the public and say, here's what we can do. Is this what you want? This is, you're telling us you're interested in this, and we believe this is a viable plan. And then we're saying to private sources of funding, you know, will you help? If you will help, then we can also do these other things, you know, like the adult daycare or memory care facilities. But the plan is fully sufficient on its own and of value to the public without any private money. So we can launch the project, send in the ballot measure for August 3rd to provide the funding for this project. And if other entities are willing to pitch in, then we can accomplish even more. This would truly be a cutting edge system that no one else is doing. No one else has really found a way to deal with this problem. There's facilities closing left and right, not a lot of options, and no one really has found a way to address that. What we're doing truly is cutting edge, but it is new, and we believe it'll work and be a real value to the public that we serve. So, but ultimately it will be up to them. It definitely will require a lid lift, and it will require all of us to sort of support this and to believe in the idea. The one thing the public has not heard, I should probably address this, is exactly what's happening tonight. What's happening tonight is we are proposing a letter of intent with the village at the harbor for us to acquire it. That acquisition is contingent on public funding. The village has agreed to be acquired for $4.8 million. We believe that at current bond rates, that would cost us around $310,000 a year to service that bond for 20 years, which is well within our capacity if we could lift. I believe that is, broadly speaking, the plan. As always, I am not succinct, but I think if you're a member of the public hearing this for the first time, it's really worth explaining what's going on. I know that for you as commissioners, you've heard most of this and you've had the communication. And we do have a detailed proposal, which we put up on the website for those that are interested. So for tonight, we need to decide if we're moving forward, and that would involve agreeing to the letter of intent and agreeing to submit a ballot measure. I'm proposing 70 cents, but we can definitely discuss that. So that's my part of it. Commissioner Lehman and Commissioner Seitz, I don't know if you want to add more stuff on what you want to say. I'll turn it over to you.
Can you hear me? I just had to, my computer just restarted. Hello?
We can hear you, Gail.
We can hear you.
This started as a creative solution. I want to say that we were looking at some of the goals and objectives that the planning grant had come up with, one of which was, you know, filling this need for facility use. And, you know, initially we just thought, we'll talk to the village at the harbor about, you know, subsidizing Medicaid beds potentially there and starting that way. And then it moved into a discussion about how we could advocate. The goals of the planning grant have been workforce development, have been housing, and have been dealing with long-term care, aging in place, and also facility-based care for seniors. So it connected to a lot of the goals that we've been having. And what the planning grant had found too is that it's a circular pattern, right? If you don't have housing for workers, then you don't have workers. If you don't have good pay for workers, you don't keep workers. If you don't have, you know, workforce development where you train people and you make it easy to do that, then you don't sustain workers, you don't get new workers. And so I think it ties into a lot of the goals. And I think it could also, we could be assisting countywide with being able to help be a hub for new care workers to be trained and potentially to be sort of a home care agency of sorts that workers can be vetted through, which has been something that we've been lacking in our county for a long time, and that both Orcas and Lopez need as well. They just need someone to be an oversight agency. So there's potential, and then we could run the care coordination grant out of the facility as well, so that we have access to care for people who are residents, access to people for care who could become residents or are short-term residents because they're on some sort of respite care situation. So there's a lot of great things that can be done. And so the idea is this would be the start of a hub that would be these long-term care creative solutions that really need to become to be developed nationwide. Because of the shortage of workers, because of so many facilities closing, and because of seniors aging and yet not having any financial means to be able to pay for care in a facility or to be able to find care workers to come into their home. So potentially it's a great possibility of expanding services for us here and for the whole county to be learning from and also be able to access some care.
I'm excited about the go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just had a question about just and thank you. I'm so excited about this. I just had questions about the long range plan and how we see partnering with other agencies and creating, you know, more services. So would we work with obviously Peace Health, but other agencies like would Skagit Valley College provide training? I'm just hypothesizing because you're the expert, but.
Well, Cornerstone already works with Village at the Harbor to help provide training for their workers, and Village at the Harbor has been providing ongoing training for their workers to get up to speed, and so it would continue. And Skagit, the Economic Development Council is already working with the planning grant and with all of senior services as well to they're willing to pay to train workers, and that is a partnership that has happened through Peace Health, which is so awesome. So yeah, there's lots of partnership possibilities. It's exciting. The sky's the limit.
Okay.
The Community Collaboration Committee gave, is it a $15,000 grant to the Economic Development Council, to Mickey Von Dassel, for training for caregivers? So that's already in process. And Randy Martin has been in conversation with us, and Randy is the administrator director of Skagit Valley Community College here. He's very excited about this. And so the promise of being able to train people, I think, is much better than it was, you know, even a year ago. And the fact that we could pay people a little more money and benefit them at Village at the Harbor would just be, I think, a great draw for folks, because people leave Village at the Harbor and go over to Peace Island as caregivers because they get benefited and they get a better wage. So it's an unfortunate, you know, kind of, they get trained and then they leave. And one can understand why. So I'm excited about the private philanthropy opportunities that we'll have as a not-for-profit. I've already heard from, you know, a philanthropist within the community who thinks this is magically timely, very excited about the prospect of this, and very much in support of the hospital district buying Village at the Harbor. I think we will have tremendous community buy-in because it will be, we own it collectively together as a community. And how exciting is that? I don't know. In the state of Washington, I don't believe that has happened yet. And my hope is, since this is what the community, you know, is asking for, we need a resource like this, where people know that they're not going to have to leave the island. And of course, it's not 100% across the board. There will be people, there will always be people that will have to leave the island for a variety of reasons. But the fact that we can keep more people here and that they know their only option isn't to go off to the mainland to God knows what facility and how far away, with their spouse not being able to drive to see them, it's an incredible hardship. So I think I feel like we owe our community this opportunity. And it's a reason, one of the reasons I got into being a hospital district commissioner. I've had many, many, many years, you know, starting from 1971, working as a nursing assistant at the Convalescent Center. And, you know, there is an RN and as a director of nursing, and I have witnessed and experienced all the hardships of you know, delivering care to our aging population. And our population is getting older, and we have 10,000 people every day turning 65. The boomers are, I think they call it the silver tsunami. So with so many facilities closing the last few years and the population growing of elders, people in their going into their sickest years, you know, I'm so excited about being able to do this. But of course, we need the public to vote for this, and that's going to be the next challenge. So.
Well, I really appreciate the comprehensive data and, you know, just all the information that you've worked with Brian and Evan to create. I think it makes sense. you know, I appreciate budgets always. Thank you. And I'm very inspired by this project and excited. So, thank you. Do Kyle and Everett have anything to add to this discussion?
No, I feel the same way. I think it's a great opportunity. It's a chance to move forward. I love the idea that the village will become sort of the nexus of a place to train caregivers to allow people to live at home. You know, and it's really the beginning of something. So I'm happy about that. I think this is. This is great. This is a grand experiment.
That sounds about right. Yeah, it sounds like a really fascinating project. I have a few kind of basic questions. I've been trying to find answers, and I'm having trouble. You may see me looking through stuff. Cheryl Lindstrom mentioned a budget a moment ago, and I feel like I keep running across expense numbers, but I haven't been able to find the anticipated income aside from the tax income as this goes forward. And of course, I've looked through the budgets for the last 3 years from the entity that's currently operating it. But is that a proxy? Obviously, that's fluctuated quite a bit between 18, 19, and then back to 2020. But is that where I should be looking for the anticipated income from the operations themselves, right? Because presumably some of this will pay for itself, right?
Yeah, the Village of the Harbor is fully self-sustaining, and we're going to need to be very careful that we don't break that, right? I mean, we need to make sure that we maintain the private pay model and that we're adding, but that we're not breaking anything. So does that answer the question or not?
Maybe. Well, let me ask you a little different way. You know, you've put together a long-term care proposal document. It's great. A lot of really good information in here. When I look at the estimated net annual expenditures on pages 2 and 3, it starts with years 1 through 3. Those numbers are added expenses. Is that right? To the current expenses?
It's basically a net expense. So if you go to the document below, you can see revenues versus expenditures. But in the summary, I'm just saying what is, you know, the overall profit loss for each part of the project.
And where's the revenue versus expenditures? That'd be great, actually. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
Scroll down past halfway up to page 2.5. Pages 1 through 2.5 is all summary. As you move into page 3, you can see more detailed budgets that have revenue and expenditures for each section of the project.
All right. I'm on the wrong document. I'm looking at long-term care proposal V5. I don't have a page 2.5.
So scroll.
What document should I be looking at?
That's the one. Yeah. So if you go to page 4, for instance, you can see a revenue and expense for the provision of 4 to 6 Medicaid beds, and those numbers are fully explained and justified. And there's definitely a revenue line item there.
Okay.
Medicaid reimbursement per patient, per month, per patient, per year, and then in total. And that's balanced against the expenses below it. And then that red number, the
net losses
went to the summary.
Gotcha.
Done that for each item. Unfortunately, it's almost all net loss, right? I mean, this is expensive. I mean, what we're proposing to do is using tax money to provide an expanded service that business on its own simply can't do. And that's what a hospital district is for. You know, our EMS service operates at a loss. We get, what, $350,000 in ambulance fees? And it's like a, you know, it's many multiples of that in expenses. So,
yeah, no, I totally understand. I'm just trying to figure out where all the numbers come in. So we're hoping to operate at a net zero, basically, with income and expenses based on what has occurred currently. The current level of service at the facility, we're hoping to net out at zero. And then we're hoping to add, we would add a bond to that, although they're paying bond expenses too. So I'm assuming that was, or, you know, they're paying for debt service. So I'm assuming that was somehow calculated in here, but I didn't quite see that. So we would add Medicaid beds. By the way, does that mean building new rooms with Medicaid beds in them, or does that mean converting existing rooms into Medicaid bed rooms?
Phase one.
That's what I mean. Yeah, phase one.
A year one proposal would be using existing capacity because they're not full. You know, when I asked, I believe it was a month ago, I've not asked since, they had four open bedrooms. And Medicaid beds are shared beds, so you could fit eight people in those rooms if you had it set up right. And, you know, that's not necessarily the case, but we would be immediately providing a certain number of Medicaid beds, and our goal is 4 to 6. But we would be expanding the facility, whether it's a second story or another lot or whatever it is, to expand capacity beyond what there currently is.
That was phase two, right? Where we were talking about going up a building onto the building?
Because that'll take time. Like, it's a big project.
Yeah.
It's part of the urgency of this, which is that will take a significant amount of time, even if we start today.
Yeah. What's the ultimate level of care we're looking at here right now? And what's the current level of care? Is it assisted living?
It's assisted living, and they provide, I think, five different tiers of care. Each of which has a different cost. And it is assisted living. It's not a skilled nursing facility.
Yeah.
But there are many, many people that will benefit from this.
So are we not proposing to turn it into a skilled nursing facility? I know I heard other commissioners talk about people not having to leave the island. So I was just assuming it would become at least a portion of it, at least, would be a skilled nursing facility. Is that not?
It doesn't solve the whole problem. There are still people who will need to leave the island. This is an assisted living facility. Yeah. You truly need skilled nursing, you will still need to leave the island. But this will significantly reduce the number of people that need to leave. Sorry, Commissioner Lachine Seitz.
Well, but just to mention that people do live at the Village at the Harbor until they die. They can be on hospice at Village at the Harbor. They can be getting some nursing care at Village at the Harbor. It's just that there are probably certain things that can't be done there. But there certainly has a lot has been done to help people live out their days there as well, with the help of the community and caregivers.
Great, thanks. And so right now there are 36 beds there currently, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you were saying maybe like 32 rooms or? Rooms. Okay, 36 rooms.
They're basically apartments, right? Some of them eventually have more than one person. But yes, 36 apartments, basically.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, I was thinking they're all individual apartments. But some of the rooms, the demand isn't currently there to fill them, and we're thinking that we would find that demand largely by providing more Medicaid support. Is that the thought on that?
That's correct. And we believe we could justify that based on a survey that was done 2 years ago, which did demonstrate substantial need. I do think we likely need to do another survey to determine the current need. But there's more than enough to go on that there is substantial need for these beds.
So you're thinking another survey might help us decide phase two, basically, or, you know, where we expand. But you feel pretty good with the phase one, that we have the information we need?
I do.
Yeah. Okay. I think those are most of the questions I have at the moment. I'm sure others have more additional questions.